This is Bristol, and you are listening to a podcast from the Bristol Confringe reading series. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first Bristol Confringe of 2017. I was just looking up the podcast as to when we started doing these on a regular basis, and it was in September 2013. So, I mean, obviously that's towards the end of the year, but technically we are in our fifth year of Bristol Confringe, which I'm quite pleased about. We've done well done, everybody. Especially all of those of you who keep turning up month after month to come and listen to stuff. Anyway, let us get on with today, and we have two fine fantasy writers for you today. First up is going to be somebody who's read in the open mic before, so we're familiar with her. Today we're going to hear quite a bit more of her fabulous story from the lands of Egypt. Can we please welcome Amanda Huskisson?
I'm going to read from my novel Melody of the Two Lands. I'm just going to read the first chapter. It's a historical fantasy set in ancient Egypt, and it's about a girl who's basically Neferu. She's traumatized by the death of her best friend, Kezi, as you'll see in the first chapter. And kind of the thing I liked about the story that attracted me to ancient Egypt is to the ancient Egyptians, magic was real. And in Melody, magic is real. So. Neferu scrambled up the slope towards the tombs, careless of the stones that lacerated her bare feet and the red sand that stained her tunic. She clutched her flute, the wood sticky against her fingers. At the top of the escarpment, she stopped. A cliff reared before her, three arched crevices hewn into its limestone. Ignoring the sun burning into her shoulders, Neferu stared at the entrances to the tombs. Then she sucked in a mouthful of dusty air and adjusted her grip on the flute before stumbling through the most recently cut entrance. Darkness cocooned her as images separated from the shadows. The paintings that decorated the tomb revealed none of the agony that had blighted her friend's last moments. Instead, Kezi was depicted offering small blocks of incense to Hathor, the goddess who should have protected her during the birth. Neferu dropped her flute and knelt on the sand-gritted rock. She untied the bundle that was wrapped around her waist, and the linen sheet flopped open, revealing two honey cakes. Freshly baked that morning, they were Kezi's favourite. Neferu had taken them while her mother attended to household matters. She placed the cakes next to a jar of beer she had left the previous day, then smoothed the cloth along the flute, wiping it clean of dust and grease. Once the wood was burnished to a glow, she pressed her forehead against the painted wall that concealed Kezi's coffin. Beside her friend's image stood a faint, identical outline, Kezi's car. Neferu hoped her friend's spirit would enjoy these offerings. Hovering above the scene was the image of a bird with Kezi's face, her ba or soul. After the funerary rites that Neferu had barely been able to watch, it could fly freely before returning to the place where her friend's body lay, fragrant and wrapped in linen. Neferu screwed her eyes shut. No tears, not here, not where Kezi's spirit might see. Turning away, she leaned against her friend's image and raised the flute to her lips. A melody unfurled across the tomb like smoke from an unsalted oil lamp. The same hypnotic tune that had made Kezi sway, her face lit by an ecstatic smile on the day she learned she was with child. The tune faltered, but Neferu couldn't let it fade. Notes flew as if blown by the wind that scattered sand across the oasis. Dust swirled through the crevice in the rock as the melody caressed the uneven roof and flooded down the plaster walls. Warmth stole from the wall, spreading across Nefru's back. She imagined Kezi slipping her arms around her and wanted to crawl inside the painting to be with her friend, to hug her, sing with her, laugh with her and watch her dance. Nefru blew harder, desperate for any sign that Kezi was listening. Her friend's image remained motionless. Nefru stopped playing and leaned her head against the wall. Tears dripped onto her neck, warm and ticklish. She smeared them away. Sand scraped her cheek and she wiped harder, driving the grit into her skin. Then she stood up and, with one last glance at her friend, turned away from the silent images and left the tomb. Outside, she watched the solar boat dip towards the horizon, carrying the sun god on his nightly journey into the underworld. She gazed across the oasis at Hathor's temples shimmering in the distance. A surge of yearning rocked her for the days when the High Priestess had allowed her and Kezi to laze beside the sacred lake. Nefru puffed out a sigh. Now the temple served only as a reminder of the goddess who had abandoned her friend. A breeze ruffled her hair. She longed to follow it across the mountains that cut the oasis off from the rest of the two lands. Instead, she marched down the slope to where the slums of Karga waited, still, silent and suffocating. She sprinted through the alleys until they widened to accommodate the compounds of the more affluent residents of the oasis. Feeling like a fly caught in honey, she trudged up an incline and sank onto the wall outside her home. She leaned her flute against the mud brick and frowned at her fingernails. Sand from Kezi's tomb stained them red. Nefru inhaled deeply, breathing in the aroma of roasted goat that mingled with the scent of lotus blossom and a whiff of the sewers. Snatching up her flute, she strode across the compound towards the whitewashed house. At the front door, she rinsed her hands in a bowl of lukewarm water and tried to rub away the sand. The red crescents stayed under her nails. She glanced into the house where an oil lamp flickered in the reception room, illuminating her father and his business partner, Jahi. "Don't loiter in the doorway, girl," her father said. The white linen skirts wrapped around his waist did little to contain his belly. "This is no time to finally pay attention to your appearance. We've been waiting for you to return from your wanderings. You know how your mother frets when you're abroad at night?" Nefru gripped her flute. If her mother had any concerns about her lateness, she was fully capable of expressing them. Jahi rose from his stool, the cautious edge to his smile making her hesitate. The opposite of her father, he was tall and slender, patient and calm. At their vineyard, he ensured every transaction was detailed on papyrus ledgers. Her father dealt with selling the wine. Mostly Nefru heard him complain about being swindled on a daily basis. She settled onto a stool and rested the flute across her lap while her father rubbed his hands together, his eyes brimming with anticipation. She waited, unwilling to encourage him. He dealt with her silence the way he always did, by filling it with words. "Are you not eager to hear what good fortune has come your way?" Nefru forced herself not to shake her head. "We have discussed the matter," he continued, "and Jahi has offered to take you as his wife." The room seemed to tilt away from Nefru. She clutched the flute as it warmed in her hands. How could Jahi be so blind? He knew she'd been in the birthing room with Kezi. A gust of wind blew through the small square windows set high in the walls. Flames shivered in the oil lamps, distorting the painted lotus blossoms that adorned the room. Nefru started when Jahi spoke. "I have visited the tomb of my beloved Dalila, may she rest, and she has signalled to me that I should take another wife. With Tariq in Thebes these past 5 years, I long for more sons to fill my home." His eyes betrayed a mixture of concern and kindness, but he couldn't mean it. If he did, he wouldn't have made such a thoughtless offer. "Come now, daughter," said her father. Show your gratitude to our neighbour for offering such an advantageous match. Advantageous to whom? The words were out before she could stop them. Neferu, her father said in a tone he seldom used before guests, thank Jahi for his offer. She stared at the man who had indulged her as a toddler, letting her join in when he played the board game Senet with her father. Sometimes he even allowed her to throw the wooden sticks that gave him his next move. He rarely won when she helped. It is true that I have much to gain from our marriage, Jahi admitted. Tariq shows no inclination to return home, while your father has two sons working at the vineyard. The flute grew warmer. Its heat spread along Nefru's fingers and etched a line across her thighs. She drew courage from it. She would never marry Jahi or anyone. She would find a way out. But for now, she had to escape this room, and to do that, she had to lie. I thank you for the honour you do me and consent to your offer. She couldn't say wife. The very word conjured up the stench of blood that had filled the birthing room. All Kezi had cared about was her son. Sticky with her blood, he had wailed when placed in her arms. Neferu had resisted her friend's entreaties to take the infant. She wanted to save Kezi, not wrestle with the creature stealing her life. Nefru's mother finally took the squalling newborn, while Neferu clung to her friend and willed her to recover. The memory was shattered by her father, cheerfully condemning her to Kezi's fate. The matter is settled then. His proud grin made Neferu long to shout that she wasn't a goat to be bought and sold. She was a person with feelings, but it would do no good. Her father would simply stare at her as if an actual goat had addressed him. Run along and ask your mother for wine to aid our celebrations. I have much to discuss with my brother and neighbour, who will soon become my son. He gave Jahi a wink that made Neferu wish she could strike him. Unable to breathe, she fled from the room. The pressure in her chest grew as she stumbled out of the house. She halted in the middle of the compound. A sob escaped. Then she ran. She raced down the slope away from her home and turned into an alley lined with mud brick hovels. Before she could gather speed, a figure stepped out of the shadows. Slow down, little sister. Her brother Ishak grabbed her by the arm as she tried to dart past. What do you want? Breathing hard, she glared at his fingers digging into her upper arm. His nails were red as if, like her, he was unable to resist visiting Kezi. I trust you aren't on your way to disturb my wife's slumbers with another of your maudlin tunes. He tightened his grip. No, I'm not. Neferu fought to keep her face blank, knowing that any glimpse of pain would make him worse. Are you on your way home to attend to Umi for once? Ishat's grip loosened at the mention of his son, the son Kezi had clung to with more determination than her own life. An ache Neferu couldn't outrun expanded in her chest. She should have prayed harder to Hathor, begged the goddess for a spell to assist the midwives. Instead, she had wept useless tears that failed to save her friend. She twisted her arm free and rubbed the bruises left by her brother's fingers. His gaze dropped to her flute, and before she could move, he snatched it. Give it back! She lunged at him. Not until you tell me why you're racing through the streets at this hour. He tossed the flute from one hand to another. As if you don't know, she snapped. Perhaps I do, perhaps I don't, but I've a fancy to hear it from you. Repeating the proposal made it seem more real, but Ishak wouldn't relent until she responded, and she needed her flute. Even if its magic no longer pleased Kezi, it was her final connection to her friend, a connection her brother would delight in severing. Jahi has offered to take me as his wife. Ishak's laugh bounced along the alley. The hovels seemed to creep closer, reaching for Neferu and pulling her into benign incarceration. And I suppose you informed him in no uncertain terms of your opinion on the matter. Father didn't give me the chance. She fixed her gaze on the flute, willing it not to fall. If you devoted as much time to cleansing yourself as you do to taking care of this thing, her brother said, you might have attracted the attentions of a younger husband. she glared. So he can make my belly swell like you did, Kezzy's. Ishak stopped throwing the flute. She was happy, according to you. Nefru saw her chance and dived for the flute. Biceps straining, she pulled the instrument downwards while her brother held on as if she weighed no more than a scarab beetle. Then, without warning, he let go. Nefru fell backwards and slammed onto the packed earth. Her teeth cracked together as the flute skittered across the alley. Blood flowed, salty and metallic, onto her tongue. She scuttled after the flute and attempted to wipe away the scuffs caused by the fall. As the wood became greasy with her fingerprints, she opened her mouth to shout at her brother. The words died when she looked up. Ishak was staring at the ground with the bewildered expression he wore so often since Kezi's passing. Nefru realised she'd hit too raw a nerve. She scowled. It was his own fault. He hid his grief so far beneath his insults that when it showed, its depth was a shock. Before she could apologise, he straightened. With detached fascination, she watched him draw back his fist. Had grief finally eroded the barrier that kept him from striking her? His fist rushed towards her. Heat seared Neferu's palms. The flute swung upwards and wood cracked against bone. Ishak leapt back, clutching his wrist. Ouch, you little scorpion! Rolling around in the dirt is all you're fit for. Nefru barely heard him. She stared at the flute, but the heat had fled. It must have been her imagination. She remembered the warmth that had crept up her arms when Jahi proposed, a subtle increase in temperature that was weak enough to have come from her. This heat was akin to the desert at its most merciless. Her brother's shadow swamped her. She scrambled to her feet and dusted specks of ochre sand from her tunic with meticulous care. When she had herself under control, she looked up. Ishak was glowering down at her. If you're not going to disturb my wife, where are you going? The desert? Trust you to seek out its dangers at night. Nefru lifted her chin. Just because you fear it, don't expect the same of me. He gave her a scathing look. If I hadn't witnessed your birth myself, I would take a look at that nest of red hair and think you a foreigner. You were about 3 at the time. What could you possibly have witnessed? Mess, something you've clung to ever since. How strange that you can recall the details of my birth, yet when your wife was dying for your son, you were nowhere to be found. Ishak's cheek jerked, and Nefru almost regretted her accusation, until an early memory sparked. The time she had fallen when toddling after a string of carnelian beads he dangled before her. She'd wept, and he'd laughed. Her family had chuckled at the mischievous boy, while Jahi brushed grit from her knees and quietened her sobs. Something twisted inside Nefru. Jahi had ruined any memories of his kindness. Her brother's shoulders drooped. You're not worth the effort. Until tomorrow, when you find some other way to torment me. A small part of her hoped it was true. If their battles continued, she could pretend Kezi's passing hadn't changed everything. Ishak barged past her and Nefru stared at his receding back. Swiping away a tear she would never let him see, she turned away from her brother and resumed her sprint. For a moment, it gave her the illusion of freedom. The desert beckoned with its promise of escape. Darkness shielded Nefru and she wished the chaos of night would sweep her away. Instead, the path of stars that arched silently across the sky offered only a prison of calm and peace. Jahi understood her love of night and of the desert. It was one of the reasons she was fond of him. But as a husband, never.
BristolCon Fringe is a monthly reading series produced by the BristolCon Foundation. Our thanks to the Shakespeare Tavern for providing us with a venue. The music at the beginning of this podcast is The Future by Chevy 174.